Hello there and welcome to the A to D talk show, where we talk about controversial issues and deliberate on them. We believe that the world is like a coin and it is best to see both sides of it. So come on, join us as we agree to disagree.
Good evening everyone for coming to A to D talk show, where we agree to disagree. Today we are going to be talking about World War One, World War Two, and their roles in technological advancement. The person who is our guest speaker for today is Onyekachi Okoye. He has a very esoteric understanding of the World War, World War One, World War Two, and several wars, but this discussion is going to be on World War One and World War Two. You're very warm to welcome, Onyekachi Okoye. And it's good to have
you. Thank you, guys. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it is good to have you on the show. So without any further ado, let us shoot. So can you just give us, a bit of this history on World War One and World War Two and how it all played out?
All right. So once again, it's a pleasure to be here. So, when we talk about World War One and World War Two, there are several things that you have to understand, in the sense that these were not wars that just spread overnight. Now, first of all, I'd like to point out that the 20th century was a very, very interesting century. Now, why is this so? The reason for this is that the 20th century, we kind of invented or patented the ability to kill people en masse, or should I say to kill each other en masse. Yeah. Now, so when we talk about World War One, the foundations of what led to this war started in the Franco-Prussian War. Some call it Franco-German War, which happened. It was just a brief war around 1871. So it was basically between France and Southern and Northern Germany, led to the unification of the German Empire. So let's fast forward to 1914. Now, in 1914, most of Europe were in this kind of tense environment, so to speak. And the reason for this was, now, Europe had monarchies, from the Russian, that's the Tsars in Russia, to German Empire, to the French Empire, and to the British Empire. And obviously, despite the fact that they were all kind of related, it didn't really help matters. And now, so they started forming alliances. That's when you hear about the Triple Entente and the Triple Alliance. The Triple Alliance being the Germans, the Austria-Hungarian Empire, and the Italians, while the Triple Entente being Russia, Britain, and France. So now, in 1914, something happened. And what happened was that the Austria-Hungarian Empire invaded Bosnia and Herzegovina. Now, This angered the Serbs, that's the Serbians. And the reason that this angered the Serbians was that the Serbians had plans of uniting the entire Southern Slav. Southern Slavs making up of the Croatians, the Hungarians, the Bulgarians. Now, and so what they did is that they started causing dissents, like the anarchists and riots and all whatnot. Now, so and when the Russians saw what was happening, they kind of allied themselves with the Serbians. Fast forward, then later on, the heir apparent to the Austrian-Hungarian throne, Archduke Franz Ferdinand, on a visit to Sarajevo. So in the morning of the visit, an assassination attempt was carried out on his life, but he escaped it. Instead, it was his officers that were injured. Now, he was warned that he shouldn't go back again, but in order to go visit the injured soldiers in the hospital, he went back again to visit them. Along the way, took a wrong turn. Then a young Serbian nationalist with the name of Gavrilo Princip saw the opportunity, killed him and his wife. A month later, Austria-Hungarian Empire declares war on Serbia. In retaliation, France and Britain declare war on Germany, who was helping us to the Austria-Hungarian Empire, and I mean, the rest is history. So I think that's just a brief expression of what basically led to World War One.
Yeah, so can you just speak a little about what happened in World War II, because that was where everything hit the roof.
Yeah. So for World War II, I mean, the German Empire and the Austro-Hungarian Empire, they lost World War I. Yeah. And so that was where you hear about the Treaty of Vienna. Now, the issue with that treaty was, I mean, the Germans weren't even invited. The Austro-Hungarians weren't even invited. It was kind of like they put the entire blame of all the atrocities and calamities that happened in the war on squarely on the feet of the Germans. They broke up the Austro-Hungarian Empire into several smaller states. And basically, this was what marked the end this was what led to the fall of the monarchy in more than half of Europe. Now, so when this happened, Germany was forced to pay heavy reparations. And in fact, they were into so much debt that I think they continued paying the debt until early 21st century. And the thing is, so this led to serious economic issues, because the German economy was in the drain. Nothing was working. It got so bad that I think their currency then, $1 was approximately a trillion Reichsmark or Deutschmark as of then. So when this happened, I mean, the German people, that sense of nationalistic pride, it was no more. And this was when a young Adolf Hitler saw the opportunity, thought about how could he unite his people and try to right their wrongs, or kind of like enact revenge on the crimes that are being committed against them. So basically what he did was, in order to unite the people, he gave them a single enemy, the Jews in particular, joined the Nazi or the Socialist Party, and I mean, from there we saw what happened. So it's quite unfortunate,
but so just for statistics sake, right? We had a lot. These two world wars had a lot of casualties, and if you look at World War II especially, you see that the war ended in 1945, 3rd September 1945, and you have casualties of 60 to 80 million people from both. Opposing sides.
Yes.
We have 6 million in that range. We have 6 million Jews, 25 million military people were killed. These were people that were killed, and 55 million civilians. And if you look at the World War One, it's not different. World War One, they had 9 million soldiers that died from the both parties. We have 21 million soldiers that were wounded, and we had 10 million civilians casualties. And the question now in this whole show is, how can we justify that this world war that led to so much technological advancement is worth the lives that it took?
Well, it actually depends on how you want to see it. The truth of the matter is that if these two world wars never occurred, I mean, all the technological advances that we've got today, it wouldn't have been possible, in the sense that it would have taken like extra 100 or 200 years to really get to the point that we are today. Now, what I mean by this, I'm trying to say that, now, let's say we are currently in the year 2020. Now, imagine if World War One and World War Two never occurred, it means that would be in terms of technological levels, would actually be looking at or be using technologies and inventions that, let's say, so it's basically like you are in the year 2020, and the rate of technological development is akin to, let's say, 1955, something like that. So when you look at this, for example, now let's look at technological advancements during World War One. In the area of, chemical and biological warfare. Now, all those chemicals, for example, let's look at chlorine gas. Now,
what acid?
It helps industries.
Sorry, what acid?
Chlorine gas. Chlorine gas.
Okay.
So now, in terms of chemical production, it kind of, you know, brought about innovations on better production processes, how to create chemicals apart from the gas, and in production of other chemicals that are used in various other industrial processes. Another thing is, okay, let's look at it now. Sanitary pads, which are used by women today. Sanitary pads came about because there was an overabundance of cellulose during at the end of World War I. And this cellulose was mostly used in making bandages, which were used to treat soldiers. So when they came and saw the overabundance of cellulose, they now said, okay, what can we use all these extra to do? And the process, someone thought about repackaging it as in form of sanitary pads, and that's what we saw today. And that is okay. For example, now when we talk about the space race, now the V2 rocket, also known as the Aggregate A4. So basically, the V2 rocket was the first long-range guided ballistic missile. Now, so some experts have actually referred to it as the precursor to the space age. And the reason for this is that the innovations that came about with the production of that rocket led to the production of the rockets which we use today, or even which took man to the moon, when talk about the cosmonauts and the astronauts, Sputnik, the Apollo missions, and everything. So there was, apart from this, you also talk about like advancements in tanks, aircraft carriers, radios, cryptography, computing. I mean, there are actually a lot. So it depends. You could make a very, very strong case that, well, obviously losing lives, it's not worth the loss of lives, but you could actually make a very, very strong and compelling case that in a way it is, in a way.
Okay. So we also saw that in the war, I mean, I agree with you on the whole discussion of saying that if we didn't have the world wars, the technology we'll be using today would be outdated, like that of 1956. And I mean, it is true because men are driven most by revenge and anger. So this pushed a lot of the drive to win war pushed a lot of scientific innovations and inventions during that time. And it's even quite surprising that in World War I, planes were actually used, because planes were just made in the 1900s. So it was not up to a decade. I mean, it was maybe just 14 years after the invention of the aeroplanes that we saw the use of aeroplanes during the World War I. And then if you look at World War II, you see an improvement on it. And we've seen all this. But now the question is, can you narrow it down to the technologies we use today, the technologies that we can't survive with? So are there technologies that were invented during the World War that we cannot survive with today, that is very relevant to man today?
Yes, okay. So think about that. Now, for example, let's look at the medical field. Now, in the medical field, most of the drugs that we are using today, even apart from drugs, also equipment. For example, the MRI scanner, for example, and other medical machines or equipment that are used for
penicillins.
Penicillin, yes, yes. So now the thing is, most of these equipment we are actually made like massive improvements, massive advances we are made during the war, because they are looking for faster ways of treating soldiers, faster ways in surgery, faster ways of fixing broken bones, amputating arms and legs and all whatnot. And then let's look at, for example, now the evolution of aircraft as we know it. Now, to a World War II historian, the way he puts it in his own words were that the way he puts it in his own words were like that the soldiers rode into war with horses and left the war in airplanes. And now nothing is more signified than this, and the fact that, for example, in World War I, they had only ordinary biplanes. Yeah. Now, these biplanes were mainly in the beginning of the war, especially towards the Battle of the Somme and Verdun. Yeah. These biplanes were only used for reconnaissance because they weren't powerful enough. It was later during the ending of World War One that they were now able to attach machine guns into these planes.
Yeah.
And that was where the first aerial battles began.
Yeah.
And another thing is that, okay, when I talk about air traffic controls, for example, definitely when you have lots of planes leaving a particular place, you've got to have some form of air traffic control in order to avoid air collisions and accidents. You get what I'm saying? Now, so most of these inventions, even radar, when you talk about the German U-boats, the advances in submarine technology, depth charges, even so many things, radar technology, now all these made, even radio communication, one-way, two-way communications and stuff like that, all these advances were made during the wars. And now, okay, after the First World War, you could say that, okay, the evolution of the aircraft, it wasn't really that fast for World War One, because I mean, then they were still using normal propeller engines and stuff like that. But then World War II, everything changed. And the reason for this was that in World War One signaled the era of what we call trench warfare. And trench warfare was basically, I mean, soldiers dig ditches and stand that ditches, those ditches, and shoot at each other. And then after some time, they try to charge to meet the enemy in the next ditch. And obviously, the enemy with their machine guns and their bombs will mow them down, and it will continue going back and forth, thereby leading to like a heavy loss of life. Also, you could look at the Battle of Verdun and the Somme as examples of the horrors of trench warfare. Now, after this, they were now looking at, okay, how can we have the advantage? Because the World Wars was basically, whichever nation has the highest technological capabilities and advancements will obviously have a better advantage in the war. And also take note that the Germans had always shown that they were always a nation with massive and technological advancements and capabilities. Now, heading into World War II, obviously the Germans didn't want to go through the hassle of trench warfare again. So what did they do? Their scientists innovated, created faster tanks, and which led to Operation Blitzkrieg. Now, Operation Blitzkrieg was what led the Germans to capture France under a couple of weeks compared to months previous to World War One. So all these things, all these advancements from the piston engine, from piston engines to jet engines and stuff like that, there were actually a lot of them, a whole lot.
I mean, this is a whole lot of information. I mean, this is a whole lot of information, and I agree with you on almost everything here. But the concern that I would, let's bring this back home. The concern that I would have, and the question I'll have, is in as much as World War One and World War Two, we are one of the greatest wars, and even for World War One, we even saw that the war ended in 1918, and that was when the Spanish flu came in and wiped over 55 million to 60 million people in the world. And we see that in World War II, we had the same catastrophe. But the question is, do you think that outside the World War I and World War II, do you think that war generally spurs technological advancement? Do you think
that... Yes.
Yes, that's the question. Do you think it's post technological advancement? Because let's not forget, you spoke about medical
advances,
and let's not forget that human beings were actually used. I mean, they were tested. They were used as lab rats, as guinea pigs without anesthesia. I mean, yes, we enjoy all this today, medical science, where a lot of medical advancement occurred during the World War One and World War Two. But so to think about it, that these solutions we use now, these medicines we use now, these things we enjoy, came from people who were used as lab rats, because I mean that's what the Germans were doing. They were using Jews as they tested all manner of reagents and solutions and medical hypotheses on them just to come to what they believe what we believe or what we use now as drugs. So again, the question is, is there a fundamental problem with human beings? if you conclude that technological advancement can only occur or can only be the catalyst involved in spoiling these wars and spoiling these advancements must come through war.
Yes, I agree that, I mean, it's so obvious that we human, or should I say mankind, we are not perfect. So I think now if you look across the eras, I mean, it's always been one war to another. You've got rise of empires, fall of empires. If you remember in the beginning of this podcast, I mentioned that the 20th century was a very, very interesting century, because I mean, World War One, World War Two, the Cold War, which spanned for almost 55 years. I mean, that was something else. And so all these, I mean, yes, we are fundamentally and intrinsically flawed, and it's as if it's hard coded into mankind that we will always have issues with each other. Sadly, it is. Sadly, it is.
Okay.
The only I feel, and I can also add that, I mean, no matter how much we try to mitigate all these issues, as far as there's always that feeling of war in the horizon,
yeah.
Countries, nations will still continue trying to innovate, trying to gain an advantage over the other. I mean, for example, let's look at the space race in the 1950s and the 60s between the Russians and the Americans. So basically, all this was one of the issues that led about from the Cold War, which, funny enough, the Cold War was also linked to World War One, because from an ideological point of view, the Cold War started in 1917 after the fall of the Russian monarchy and the rise of the Bolsheviks, thanks to Vladimir Lenin. So all these are related. All these are related.
Okay, but again, the question I will also have for you is, we have seen advancements in technology in the 21st century. We have seen tremendous
yes.
technological advancement. We have seen us having phones that can just call, to the ones that can now text, to the ones that can do both of them at the same time, to the ones that can stream videos online. We have got so much advancement, especially when it comes to communication and computing science. We have advanced so much from social media, from normal, from postcard, letter, way of communication, to social media, to streaming live videos. Even what we are doing now is a form of technological advancement. And we have experienced all this without having to go into even what it's called, even a bit of Cold War, because Cold Wars are wars that are not hot. I mean, that's why it's called Cold War.
yeah.
So we have experienced all this advancement, and we have experienced this advancement from companies and countries from different across the nations. So we have China making phones, you have America making phones, you have Japan making South Korea making phones. Okay, we talk about automobile industry, you can see advancement. Now we are even talking about cars that drive themselves and electric cars, and we have seen all these advancements without having to go into a single form of or what looks like war. There may be a trade war, because what is happening between China and America, but we haven't gone into a point where we have casualties. Do you think that this scenario I just painted is a counterpoint to the assumption or the hypothesis that we will not have as much technological advancement as we have today if the war was not fought?
Not at all. It's definitely not a counterpoint. And the reason it's definitely not a counterpoint is that, now, the question is, all these advances, what was the catalyst? That's the question. Now, as you know, a catalyst is something that speeds up the rate of reaction. For example, when we talk about chemicals, so you say a catalyst speeds up a rate of reaction in a chemical before it finally fizzles out, and the chemical reactions can even continue long after the catalyst is no more. So I for me, that's what we are seeing today. For example, now, most of all these, even though the First World and the First, Second, and the Cold War had ended, I mean, as far as there's always that threat of on the horizon. I mean, everyone is trying to innovate. There's always this desire, this hunger to find better ways to gain more advantage over the other. So it's definitely not a counterpoint.
Okay. But, not a counterpoint. But we can see today that there is a bit of tension between China and America. Right?
Yes.
And yet, most of the phones that are made, most of the iPhones are assembled in China. Because, so you see a bit of cooperation. You see a bit of, if you go to Silicon Valley, you see a lot of Chinese, a lot of Indians working there. So in as much as there is this tension of trade war between the Chinese and America and sometimes Russia, but we see a bit of cooperative, cooperative competition. So in this is not a question, this is my suggestion. I feel like if we have been able to do this without having to fight and go into war, I think that there is a bit of hope that just maybe we may not need to go into war again, because everybody saw in January we almost had an outbreak of World War III, which I know was going to be very catastrophic. But again, I just feel like we don't have to go to war to have such a technological advancement. I get your point of view, but it is me. This is just me agreeing, or us agreeing to disagree. So just to spend a little more time, we all know about the bombing in Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Yeah.
What many people do not know about is the bombing that happened before that. The one that the Japanese threw on the
Pearl Harbor.
Yes. But why don't we... So when I was reading about this whole World War stuff, and I came to the point where, I was hoping to get to the point where they talked about the bombs dropped in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But apparently, what I saw first was the Pearl Harbor bombing that killed over that had counted over 200,000 or I think less for U.S. soldiers. And then
barriers.
Yeah. And then U.S., did a revenge by throwing bombs to the Japanese territory in Nagasaki and then Hiroshima. Why is it that nobody talks about this bombing before that of the Hiroshima and Nagasaki?
Well, the reason for that is the scale. You see, now the attack on Pearl Harbor, when it's crippled, or it you could say it almost crippled the American Navy. But then you just like I explained earlier, when it comes to war, it's always the country that has the higher technological advantage that always wins. So now the Japanese, they were using the normal bombs yeah. That their load, the destructive capability of these bombs were very, very, very small. So basically, and you know the funny thing about the Pearl Harbor now, after the attack on Pearl Harbor led to two unbelievable innovations. Now, the first innovation was, the rise of the B-19 or B-29 American bomber. Now, these were planes. So what Americans did was that they taxed their scientists, their engineers, to bring up a new type of aircraft that, number one, this aircraft was going to be able to be very, very, very agile and highly maneuverable. Number two, could travel over long distances. For example, if you look at the map of the world, you realize that the distance between America to Japan is quite far, flowing normal air traffic routes. Now, so the taxed them, get something that has a very, very long-range capability and can also carry a very high load. Now, apart from that, they now went on to develop the Manhattan Project, obviously, which led to the atomic bomb, basically. And now, the funny thing is that now, after the little boy was detonated in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, one thing is now, those atom bombs cannot be compared to the bombs that we have today. And don't forget now, the Manhattan Project, the development of...
When you say it can be compared, it means we have more... what do you mean that it can be compared? We have...
Yeah, the reason I say is Yes, they say they higher destructive capability, because all we have now is hydrogen bombs, and these are worse, still like at times two of ordinary atomic bombs. And one thing you have to notice is that now, apart from the Manhattan Project leading to the creation of bombs, the Manhattan Project also laid the groundwork of nuclear reactors, which is used in power generations that we have today, because all this is based on nuclear fusion. So you see, you can see that all these are connected. And another thing that you pointed out is that about we not having wars now is that, see, the truth of the matter is that right now, we cannot afford to have a large-scale war, because it's going to be the end of humanity. And why do I say this? Now, after the First World War, there was something called the Doomsday Clock. So basically, what the Doomsday Clock is now, the technological advancements that humanity has, how close are we to extinction or to destruction, total annihilation, if there was to be a war? Now, sometime in the 1950s, it was, I think, a few seconds to midnight. Midnight being ground zero, entire destruction of the human race. And then currently, we are hearing now that it's about 2 minutes to midnight, meaning that it just takes 2 minutes for one nation to launch their nuclear bombs and another nation to react, and it's all over. So I mean, that fear, no nation wants to start that. We've had very, very close shaves. The one where the Russian early warning and detection systems were malfunctioning and went off. So the Russians thought that the Americans had launched the nuclear bomb. As the story goes, there were actually three Russian generals. The first one had agreed to launch the Russian bombs. The second had agreed, and the third was like, let's wait, because he wasn't sure that the Americans would be so stupid to actually launch their bombs. And luckily, after everything, he thought that he was right. So there was no need to launch the bomb. But now imagine how close we actually were to such World War III on such an occasion. So it's quite unfortunate.
Yeah, so thank you very much, Onyeka. Thank you. Thank you for having to spare your time to come and speak to us about World War I, World War II, and then technological advancement. And then to all those who are listening, and people who are listening to this over the podcast, we have our Zoom meeting every Saturday where we talk about controversial topics, what a discussion. Next week, we're going to be talking about a very crucial topic, God and religion, a facade or a reality. This topic is just going to talk about going to be focused on two or three religions, which is Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, where we intend to clarify the apocryphal reports that Islam support terrorism, Christianity is very judgmental, and they're hypocrites and all. So join us next week, Saturday, and by 8 o'clock GMT plus one West African time. And once again, thank you very much, Onyeka, for speaking to us about World War One, World War Two, and technological advancement. And we hope to see.
It's my pleasure.
We hope to see you next time with a different topic which you enjoy talking about. So thank you everyone for coming. And remember, this is A to D Talk Show, where we agree to disagree. Thank you. See you next week.